Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
この番組はジャパントップ10ナンバーワンの J-POP ポッドキャストです。このエピソードはスペシャルエピソードです。You're listening to Japan Top 10, the number one Japanese music podcast. You're listening to a special episode on Japan Top 10.
Hello everyone, this is Andy.
And this is Connor.
And we are here to bring you a special episode for this September. This is our special episode all focused on Japanese songs used in Mando and Kanto pop. So we are excited to bring that all to you today. But before we get too deep into things, I have a few announcements for all of our listeners.Do you want to join our team? We are currently looking for various staff members, including audio editors, content producers, and even on-air hosts like us to join our podcast. You can join the biggest and best Japanese music-based podcast out there. For all of those details, please check out our website at jtop10.jp/join. Also, are you looking to advertise your business?Why not do it on our podcast? You can market your brand onto one of the world's most popular Japanese cultural-based podcasts out there, reaching up to potentially 70,000 listeners around the world on a weekly basis. That's all including advertising costs that will fit your company's budget. For details on that, you can also check out our website at jtop10.jp to find out what we can do for you to advertise your business and suit your company's needs.
And if you're an indie Japanese music artist, we would love to have you. So that means if you create Japanese music and you want some more exposure, you can definitely reach out to us, and especially our music director, by sending them an email at nola@jtop10.jp. Yep, her name is Nola, N-O-L-A, along with the song you'd like us to feature on the podcast.And if you're enjoying this episode, remember you can receive up to triple the number of songs by becoming a Patreon donor, just starting at $1. So if you are hearing this advertisement, it means that you are not a Patreon donor. And just for $1, you can receive this episode without any announcements or interruptions. And it's just commentary and music. Isn't that lovely? So please check out our website at jtop10.jp/club for details.And now, without further ado, I am going to introduce us to today's episode stuff.
Beautiful.
For today, we're actually featuring Chinese and Cantonese covers of J-pop and J-rock staples that have struck a chord with fans outside of Japan and brought them a whole new life in the world of Mando Kanto pop.And me and Andy were talking about this before we started recording. I don't have much exposure. Like, I've been listening to Kanto pop for maybe the last year or so. And besides going to China for 2 weeks over the summer, I really have zero knowledge. So this is going to be a learning experience for at least me. But I'm very excited, and I've, you know, really learned to appreciate Kanto pop
Nice. No, it's also been a learning experience for me. In past episodes, I've talked about Fei Wong and Teresa Tang, who I believe will make an appearance on our countdown today. So I know that I've gushed about those two fabulous artists, but outside of that, I don't have a lot of exposure. And I know, well, I know a few songs from Jackie Chan, but I mean, that's not really a basis to understand the full breadth of what Mando and Cantopop have to offer. So yeah, just to for our listeners as well, we will be featuring the Japanese songs, but we'll talk about some of the artists and renditions that were done by the Chinese and Taiwanese and other artists who covered these songs in Cantonese and Mandarin. So just for our listeners, we will be still listening to our J-pop and J-rock staples that we love, but we'll feature them some discussions about the other renditions and covers of these songs. And I highly encourage everyone to seek out these covers because all of them are so good in their own right, like even outside of the artistic merit of the original. But before getting too deep into our discussion of the artists, let's rewind and talk a little bit about Mandopop and Cantopop for our listeners, just to give them a foot to stand on and understand why it is we're talking about this today. So Mandopop is a genre of C-pop, or Chinese pop, that is written and performed in Mandarin, and it has a history dating all the way back to the 1920s, when the advent of Shidaikyu, or contemporary songs, in Shanghai really came into prominence. This, of course, has the roots of early pop music featuring traditional Chinese melodies combined with American jazz music at the time, and, you know, it would eventually go on to adapt other forms of music, including Latin beats and Indonesian flair, eventually, just to develop its own style of music that became quite popular in China.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Like, we won't play any like the older stuff for you guys today. I was listening to some of like the earliest like C-pop songs, and it was really interesting. Like, it definitely sounded very American, and I was not expecting that. And so it's really interesting how it got to this point. In the 1950s, some influential recording companies, namely artists and composers in Mandopop, moved away from Shanghai into Hong Kong due to influences from the PRC. This caused further branching of styles and influence, as many of the musicians employed in the Hong Kong scene were Filipino artists, and some of the mainstays of the scene in Shanghai are reluctant to relocate. So some of these events caused a very big, I guess, diversity, you know, Mandopop scene. And so now we actually see a lot of, I think Taiwan is known for like having a lot of like popular artists. And so, yeah, now we see lots of different genres and like new musical styles and stuff like that. I've been playing some like this one group called Elephant Gym. They're a Taiwanese like math rock group on the podcast recently. Yeah. Like, that's just an example. But
yeah, we covered, I can't remember which episode, but we covered one of their songs very recently. I did. I remember talking about them and gushing about them. I'm glad you included them. And to continue off of what you were saying with the branching genres and more diversity, over the 60s, so just moving along, the branching genres in Hong Kong would kind of set the basis for Cantopop. So up until this point, it was mostly just, I mean, what you would call Mandopop. But Cantopop became a mainstay of popular culture at that time. And this would see the rise as, you know, kind of internationally, even in J-pop, the rise of British and American artists gaining a lot of traction just as being popular culture for everyone, not just Americans and whatnot. And some artists in particular that gained a lot of traction in Hong Kong were Elvis Presley, Johnny Mathis, and the Ladybirds. And artists at that time in Hong Kong would start doing, you know, covers of English language music and whatnot, and putting their own spin on it and singing it even in Cantonese, just to appeal to the local flair while also honoring the artists they love.
Yeah, and I mean, on top of this, there are also some, I guess, developments in other Chinese-speaking communities. And so I mentioned Taiwan, but also Malaysia and Singapore. And each of these have, of course, their own regional influences, including Japanese Inca in some cases. So this is, yeah, because I think Japanese music has a very strong roots in some of these places as well. and like pop culture, which is really interesting. Because you'll see a lot of these people like doing like Japanese covers, you know. So
that's what we're here for.
Yeah, but and going on to the 70s and 80s though, the influence of Taiwanese artists, along with the rising popularity of Taiwanese and Hong Kong film industries, gave Mando Pop or Canto Pop a larger audience. So with the 1978 open door policy in mainland China, allowing media from Taiwan and Hong Kong, this gave stars like Teresa Teng an even wider audience.
I saw like a quote that was like, during the day, the PRC rules China, but during the night, Teresa Teng is the ruler or something, or like she rules the night or something like that. And I thought that was so cool.
I can see that.
It was such like, I was like, yeah, that's awesome. You go, girl. But yeah, over the 80s, this would see, you know, a larger influence of rock music, especially in mainland China, where it wasn't as popular before due to certain policies restricting media. But notable artists in 80s cantopop include Jackie Chan, Anita Mui, and Leslie Cheung, as well as Priscilla Chan, and I could go on and on, because honestly, like, the 70s through the 90s, which is a big scope, is kind of the biggest, like, meteoric rise of these megastars across Southeast Asia, East Asia, and even into American audiences and non-Asian countries. I just feel like this was, like, the time where these stars gained a truly international audience.
Definitely, yeah.
Including into Japan. And in the 90s, this was kind of the biggest time for Japanese covers to feature heavily in Mando and Cantopop. And we would see a massive crossover of the worlds of J-pop and C-pop, especially with artists like Fei Wong, who I mentioned earlier, who is just someone after my own heart. She's one of my favorite artists of all time. But she would actually become the first Chinese artist to play at the Budokan in Japan. You know, flashing back into the world of Cantopop, there was the development and the rise of the quote-unquote four heavenly kings. So that is Jackie Chan, Andy Lau, Aaron Kwok, and Leon Lai, who dominated the scene and just had a chokehold on that music.
Yeah, and also R&B and hip-hop genres gain more traction alongside genre mainstays like rock and more traditional ballads. And so Shanghai and Beijing became centers of the music industry in mainland China. So that's also really cool. I love how R&B and hip-hop, like, how they just kind of permeate, it seems, every single corner of the world. Just because they're so versatile and can be, you know, used in, like, really every culture's music. And so that's really interesting. But yeah, and in Shanghai, they focused on music record publishing and distribution, while Beijing focused on music recording. And so there's this interesting, like, specialization, I guess, between the two.
No, definitely. Coming into the new millennium, in the early 2000s, Cantopop is still a huge mainstay of the Chinese music market, and you kind of see the rise of artists like Nicholas Si and Coco Lee, despite the passing of past greats like Leslie Cheung and Anita Mui, who we just mentioned. That shook the community, definitely, but there still was a strong presence of other artists. And this is also the time where some people say it's kind of the shift away from, you know, the megastars who were really unapproachable, who got a lot of promotion from their companies and a lot of promotion through TV and the film industry. They would commission things for movies, or TV themes was a huge thing. So the rise of film industry in Taiwan or Hong Kong, for example, started developing these stars and giving them a platform and an audience who were already watching these films and whatnot. But yeah, in the early 2000s, this was still also true of, you know, mainland China, where television dramas and things started to get more popular. So these megastars were not only being promoted by their companies, but kind of doing it themselves. And I think somewhere was quoted, it's like the people's musicians or something like that is what this kind of era could be defined as. But it also did see, with that like more personal affect, it did see the rise of scandals.
That is something that, you know, what you just said goes in line though with like the diversification of Cantopop and Mandopop. So that's really interesting. But the last thing I'll say also is there was this small decline actually in the genre of Kanto pop in the early 2010s, but recently, thankfully, it's seen a resurgence of popularity with artists like the boy group called Mirror, gaining wide support from fellow artists after the 2019-2020 protests about national security law in Hong Kong. And while Taiwan continued to produce many artists, mainland China also saw a rapid increase in the number of mandopop singers, bands, and idol groups as pop music. And I think idol groups are definitely the most popular like form of music consumption in like Chinese music. I see a lot of idol groups out there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, the growing mainland film industry and Chinese television drama also increased demand for mandopop. So since the 2000s, the emergence of indie rock in mainland China and Taiwan had exploded into a flourishing indie music scene in mainland China and Taiwan. Which is also true. When I was going down my elephant gym rabbit hole, I also found a lot of mandopop indie music. Like, it was really interesting. The genre is very open to new styles, and that when there's a will, there's a way, you know?
Absolutely.
And so it definitely has found a way. And so that's a very good, I think, very fast but very good summary of Mando Cantopop. And so but I'm really excited to introduce some of these songs that I think at the very least our listeners will think these songs are interesting.
But
I found two of them that I really really liked, and so once we get to those I'll gush about them.
Wow, but I'm excited. I found a few that really struck a chord with me too, so that is what a hook that was, Connor. I'm going to bring us full swing into the nostalgia mode with our next song, which is Beikoku no Haru by Masao Sen, or Sen Masao, which was released in 1977, with the Chinese cover done by the one and only, the irreplaceable Teresa Teng, under the title Beiguo Zhi Chen in 1979.
Y Yamabuki asa ni ri sui cha no ya Warabe uta kikoeru kitani no akitani no haru Aniki mo oyaji ni de mukuchi na kitari ga Tama ni wa sake de mo nonderu daro ka Ano furusato wo kaero kana Kaero
So that again was Beikoku no Haru, done by Masao-sen, who was a Japanese enka singer and is known as the singing real estate king and hotel king because he owns so many condominiums and buildings all over the world.
So this is the second song that I really, really liked.
Oh, wow!
Which is not coincidence. But this one for different reasons. Like, I think this one, I definitely have more of an idea of why I like it. And It's because it reminds me a lot of like Nepali or Tibetan music.
Wow,
like in that part of the world. Like I was so curious because like Japan and especially Japanese culture is so isolated from all of this. And so I was like, why does it sound so like familiar? But it's like, it's also at the same time very beautiful. And like, I really like this. I listened to the song definitely a few times already.
Aww.
But I listened to it many times more. But yeah, Hotel King.
Hotel King.
But this song has lyrics about a man living in the city who receives a package from his parents' house and thinks about his hometown in early spring, but also his family and his former love.
Aww. Although the specific place name does not appear in the lyrics, it's the quote-unquote northern country. That's what Beikoku means. And it also does not appear in the lyrics. The lyricist, Ide Haku, actually later described the scenes of Chinshu, which is an area in Nagano, if I'm not mistaken, I believe.
I was just going to talk more about the covering artist. So Teresa Teng reinterpreted the song and released her Chinese cover in 1979, but she also released a separate Japanese version related to her Chinese cover in 1984. So another multilingualist, which is really cool. Teng was inducted into the Popular Music Hall of Fame at the Koga Masao Music Museum in Japan in 2007, making her the only non-Japanese national to do so. That's so cool.
Yeah, I am a fan of Teresa Teng through and through. And yeah, she's like just was the star of that era and truly multinational star, you know, because I know she recorded, of course, in Mandarin and Cantonese, but she had a debut in Japan as well, completely all in Japanese, you know, on its own, but also sang in English, Cantonese, Mandarin, Japanese, and just was a superstar in her version. There's no competition between the two. Like, they're both equally beautiful in my mind for this song. And yeah, if you get the chance to listen to the Masao-sen live performance with the full chorus that's on YouTube, it's even more beautiful than just, you know, a regular rendition. And it will make you nostalgic and long for a trip to the northern country. Well, we will keep it rolling. We'll rip ourselves out of the nostalgic past into a little bit of a less nostalgic past of 1991 with our song Sore ga Daiji by Daijimang Brothers Bando. This was covered by the artist Alan Tom under the, I think it is another Cantonese cover, Huang Ya in 1992.
Get us,
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So that again was the Daijiman Brothers Band, or Brothers Bando, and that was a Japanese music band formed in 1982, and they unfortunately disbanded by 1996, but we were blessed with this wonderful song and got a great cover out of it as well.
Yeah, and they were nicknamed Saitama's Southern All-Stars because of their mixed gender, melody, and group name, which is really cool. You know, reminds me of like the Southern All-Stars.
Yeah.
But this song was released in 1991, but did not become popular until it was used in the Fuji TV's Kuni-chan no Yamada Kamenai TV and became the band's biggest hit. And so this also happens sometimes where a song won't be popular until it's used in some like pretty cool like J-drama or something like that, you know?
I think it just goes to show, like we were mentioning earlier, the truly inextricable nature of TV and music industry, like fueling each other and making one another popular. But yeah, as I mentioned, the Chinese cover was done by Haken Lee, who is a Hong Kong singer himself, as well as a television host and actor who's been active since the 1980s. He is kind of colloquially known as the Fifth King, so I mentioned the Four Heavenly Kings earlier. So he's kind of tacked on. I mean, give him his flowers. We shouldn't have to say that he's, you know, separate. He's a king in his own right, but he is the Fifth King and is often known to and referred to as Alan Tom.
Yeah, and the Chinese cover was released in 1992, which has both a Cantonese and Mandarin version to it, which is really cool that they poured both. And the Cantonese version of the song is a theme song of the TV series He Came From Heaven. The album released with the same title as the Chinese cover version has a song he had dedicated to pursue his future wife, Lu Shuyi, which is really sweet. And it's really cool. The cover version also became a, you know, a drama cover, you know, or intro.
Yeah, yeah. That's always a special little thing that can happen with these tie-ins. My notes on this one, just to give a brief comparison between the Japanese and Chinese renditions, I'll just read directly from my notes for this one because I thought it was funny. For the Japanese music video, I wrote, "The 80s are alive and well." I know this was 1991, but like the visual language is the 80s. I hate to say it. It was just like, it reminded me of like Aha and that era of music videos in America.
Yep,
but
yep,
And in terms of all of our songs, the two videos are truly siblings. I think other videos kind of deviated and whatnot, but these two videos live in the same cinematic universe because Alan Tom is like just doing all kinds of crazy stuff while performing this song. I shouldn't say all kinds of crazy stuff, but like it's very of the time, early 90s, late 80s kind of feel. So I feel like the theme of this episode for me personally is nostalgia, but yeah, check it out if you are interested in getting a little bit of an 80s nostalgia blast. All right, well, I will just preface the next introduction of this song as this is probably the, you know, the set of songs on this list that really did it for me. If Masao Sen was your hit, Connor, this next group was mine. And that is because this is Hirai Ken, who is one of my favorite artists of all time, and it's his song, Gaining Through Losing, from 2001, with the cover released the same year by the Chinese boy group F4, later named JVKV, and the Chinese title of the song being Liu Xing Yu. Meguri kuru kisetsu goto ni kono te kara kobore ochiru mono tachidomari furi kaereba samishige ni boku wo miteru itsumo itsudemo hokoreru mono wo hitotsu shinjite kita hibi deai to wakare wo kurikaeshi aruite kita michi wo
しく思う日が来ても静かなる強さ秘めた灯火を掲げていいよ自由愛情手放した時始め
So that again was Gaining Through Losing by Hirai Ken, and this was released as on his third biggest album of his career at the time under the same title, Gaining Through Losing, and it was of course released in 2001, as I had mentioned.
And the Chinese cover was sung by the popular Taiwanese boy band F4. That's one of the first like groups I was familiar with listening to Mandopop. I think they're very popular. They're very, very popular. They're too popular. But they recorded this for the popular Taiwanese drama called Meteor Garden in 2001, which is also, that sounds very familiar. Meteor Garden, I think that must also be a very popular drama.
It is. It was a huge drama in the early 2000s, across Pan-Asian hit based off of the Japanese manga Boys Over Flowers, or Hanayori Dango, which was a Korean drama, and then of course a Japanese drama, and in China it was called Meteor Garden. And F4 was created after Meteor Garden had concluded, as the band members were actually cast members of this drama series. So I kind of mentioned up top that they had to change their name. So I think F4 is the name in Boys Over Flowers, which eventually, like initially they were able to use it. They got permission from the creator of Hanayori Dango, or Shueisha, the manga producer. But I don't know, something happened where eventually they lost the rights to use that name. So they had to change their band name, I think in like 2006 or something. So after that point, they were known as JVKV, which stood for the names of the members, and it was in ascending order from the youngest member to the oldest member. But yeah, that's why there's a bit of a discretion of like what they're named.
So we did this episode on Japanese dramas.
Ah.
6 months ago? That was a long time ago. Like, it was definitely last spring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one of the things that we had to go mention was Boys Over Flowers. And I wrote the script for this one. Maybe I also hosted it, I can't remember, but I think mentioned F4. That's why it all sounds so familiar. So, like, I know this.
It's like a deep language that you pulled from the back of your mind. No? Yeah, and this is actually one I love, the Chinese cover, like the video and the intro. It has a little bit of a different intro from Ken Hirai's instrumentation, and it's, if you want just a pure injection of like early 2000s nostalgia, you need to watch the Chinese cover of Gaining Through Losing, because it did something to my brain chemistry when I re-listened to it, because I had listened to F4 before, but I don't think I had heard this song, and it just, like, it brought me to a place that I have not been in a long time, mentally speaking.
Oh, that's some more nostalgia.
Yeah, more nostalgia. It just was, it was very good, but I truly came away from this episode being an even bigger fan of Hidai Ken and F4, or JVKV. I will just mention the band members' names offhand because it feels strange.
Wow.
To refer. Yes.
Okay.
Jerry Yan, Vanessa Wu, Vic Cho, and Ken Chu. So those are our boys.
Yeah, wow, you're a connoisseur.
I am a connoisseur. It's kind of my bread and butter, unfortunately. Or fortunately, I don't know.
Fortunately. Fortunately for the podcast, at the very least.
Yes,
for
yes.
Listeners.
Yes, well, I'm glad to, you know, have been able to share that with you. But sadly, we are at the end of our final little, you know, cover and Japanese version of a song. And our last song that we're going to feature today is, it's very apropos, which I'll get into in our post-song discussion. But it is Kirodo with their song Mirai E from 1998, with the Chinese cover being done by Rene Liu in 2000 under the title Holai.
Thank you.
That again was Kirodo and Mirai-e. Now, Kirodo is actually a two-member female group who formed in 1995, and they were fascinated by the meaning and sound of the word Kirodo, which means a strong, healthy, prosperous, large, and stubborn, and decided on the group name Kirodo for that reason. They just loved the idea of it.
Japanese bands, they just love, like, take a word that they all like the sound of and use that as their name.
Yeah, literally.
That's just like, I like the sound of this, let's do it, you know. That's all there is to it, and so that's just really cool. But this song in Japanese is often sung in junior high and high school music classes and also choir competitions, and is also known as a graduation song. The original song was written by Tamaki for his girlfriend's mother when he was in the third year of junior high school, and because of that, it is often used as a song to present to his girlfriend's parents at her wedding.
Oh,
that is so sweet.
Interesting. That's really cute.
Writing a song for your girlfriend's mother. That's
so cute. That is very endearing. I had heard this song at graduations in Japan when I was there, but I did not, like, you know, consciously know it was called Mirai-e. So I was listening to it kind of like you earlier, and I was like, I've heard this before. But yeah, this makes a lot of sense that that's what it is. Yeah, so the Chinese cover is translated and titled as Later and sung by Liu Youying, or also known as Renee Liu, and was used in her 2000 album, I Will Be Waiting For You. So Renee Liu herself is actually a popular Taiwanese singer, and, you know, her career spanned over the 90s and 2000s, or at least her popularity, and the Chinese version of this song is her signature song, her signature hit, which is also interesting when a cover or something becomes, you know, your most popular song. I always find that to be quite an interesting phenomenon.
But the meaning of the Chinese song varies significantly from the Japanese version, as it speaks about someone's regrets in their love, which is kind of sad. Prior to this, Renee Liu has also released another cover of Kirodo's hits, Nagai Aida, as Hen Ai Hen Ai Ni, or translated as I Really Really Love You, in 1998. And by the way, if you just want to say I love you to someone in Chinese, you could say Wo Ai Ni. Yeah, so
beautiful.
So in case you are in China or find someone you fall in love with, a Chinese person, then you can say that. Maybe not right away, they probably will think you're very weird, but
thank you. I'm glad we're getting some relationship advice in the final hour of our episode.
Yes, what better of a time than now? But Renee Liu's nickname is Milk Tea, which I think Nora, the scriptwriter, personally found to be very charming and cute.
No, I did. Sorry, I wrote that little... I apologize. Okay. No, that one was an Andy original. I just thought it was super cute that her nickname was Milk Tea.
Do you like milk tea? I love milk tea, especially like Nepali or like Indian milk tea. It's so good.
Oh my god. After wrapping up our episode, I think I'm going to continue my morning with some milk tea now, because it's, yeah, I'm right there with you. It's so good.
Oh, that's a good idea. Maybe I should as well.
Oh, wonderful. That's our plans. Our plans for the end of our episode.
Yeah, no, if you guys don't know, me and Andy are recording this very early for Andy. It's not so early for me, but I'm still struggling. So, but yes, it's morning time for us.
Yes.
And we're going to have milk tea after this.
Yes.
And yeah, but are there any finishing remarks that you'd like to add, Andy, on, you know, Mandopop in general or the podcast?
Yeah, I just, I appreciate you opening it up. I guess I would just say to all of our listeners, if these Japanese songs struck a chord, or, you know, any of your favorite artists are have a wider audience outside of Japan, look into some of the covers and stuff that people do, because they are truly, they bring new life and new energy to the things you love. And I know for me, I learned a lot of new artists listening to this, but I also got to enjoy, you know, some of my favorite past artists like Teresa Tang and others, and F4, clearly. But yeah, I guess that would just be my closing remark. How about you, Connor? Do you have anything to leave our listeners with before we close out our wonderful exploration of Mando and Cantopop in J-pop?
To help our listeners, if you really are curious about finding covers of songs, you can just look it up on YouTube. YouTube's the best way to do it. So if you really like, I'm trying to think of like some cheesy, like Treasure by Bruno Mars, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You can look up Treasure by Bruno Mars cover, right? And you'll probably find English covers, but I'm sure, you know, if it's a popular song, you can find Chinese covers too, or Japanese covers as well, you know? Mm-hmm. So all you have to do is like look up the song name that you want and then you like, and then look up cover as well, like add cover to it, and then you'll find so many covers of, like, at the very least small, like just like YouTube channels, but also like maybe popular artists as well. I mean, if you want to find like ones of popular artists, you can probably look it up on like Spotify, like ones where they've actually like published and like released these things officially. I really like Mandopop, and I'm so happy that there's so much collaboration between Japanese and Chinese musicians on this. I really enjoyed this episode, so I'd like to thank Andy and also our listeners.
Yeah, thank you as well. It was lovely to take this journey into Mando and Kanto pop with you. But without further ado, if our listeners are interested in continuing their journey with Japanese music a little over a week from now, Kusei and Brinton will bring you a brand new Artist of the Month episode featuring the group No Name, which is typed out in a very beautiful... You should look up that name because the punctuation will give you a hit of energy in and of itself. Thank you again for listening, and we hope that you will enjoy the rest of your, I guess, the early fall and end of summer, I suppose, and that you'll enjoy our next episode coming up. Thank you for listening, and take care as always.
Yes, yes, and make sure to have some milk tea if you drink that kind of stuff.
How could I forget? Yes, close out your episode with milk tea as well. This is not endorsed, but it is endorsed by us. Yeah. All right, well, janne. Bye-bye.
All right, everyone, take care. Bye. Japan Top 10, the number one Japanese music
podcast. Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.